You know, I made my daddy proud the day I was born. When he left Walter Reed Hospital in Washington, D.C., he walked out with his first kids, sons, and twins, a double batch to boot when he left the hospital. I made my dad proud. Made my dad proud when I finished the football season and still had all my teeth mounted in the correct position. I made my dad proud the day I married and ventured out on my own and graduated college and decided I would support myself and rather than rely on him the rest of my life. I made my daddy proud when Joshua was born because Joshua turned out to be his very first grandson that would carry his name on another generation. Does it make you uncomfortable for a moment to think about making your daddy proud? You know, I think that might be just a contemporary way of saying something the Bible has said for a very long time, which is what? Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Exodus 20 and verse number 12. Well, since we're commanded to honor our fathers, and I guess we get that message, right? On Father's Day, that's what I'm supposed to do. So maybe some of you are thinking, I'm going to take my dad out to lunch. Or maybe I'm going to stop by my dad's grave today. Or maybe I'm going to give my dad a call. Whatever you do on Father's Day to honor your dad. But as I was meditating and thinking about that, I was really thinking about the fact that, you know, I don't want just one day out of the year to be a day that I honor dad. You know, if the command is honor thy father and thy mother, it doesn't say just on Father's Day every June, does it? It really is a command about how I'm supposed to live my life. As I thought about making dad's honoring my dad, I thought about making my dad proud every day I'm alive. So how do I go about doing that? How can I honor my dad, make him proud every day? Well, I've already suggested some of the ways just from my family background, different points in life. But I think Solomon suggests to us in the book of Proverbs three ways that you can honor your dad throughout your lifetime. And this is true for you today, whether your dad is living or he's already passed on. You can still honor the legacy of your father if you follow the three principles the Lord's laid on my heart from the book of Proverbs and the wisdom of Solomon. Now, most scholars believe that Solomon wrote Proverbs in the early days of his journey, when he was a young man having sons and wanting his sons to turn out right. And that toward the end of his life, he wrote Ecclesiastes as he reflected on some of the choices he made. But Proverbs, very positive book about things that sons ought to do in order, I think, to do right in life and to honor their dads. This is kind of a survey of the book of Proverbs and a way to honor dads today. And I want to give you the first of these three points that I have for you. If I'm going to honor dad, number one, I don't want to forget his words. Don't forget his words. Dad says a lot of things. Dads say things every single day. Some things we remember, some things we forget. They help shape who we are. But one of the best things we can do is remember what dad says. Look at the book of Proverbs with me. You're in chapter number 1. We're going to survey some verses. In fact, some of these are on the screen, so you might want to just follow there as well. Whatever you're comfortable with. Proverbs 1 verse 8, the first appearance of the words, my son, in the book of Proverbs. Incidentally, between chapter 1 and chapter number 7 of the book of Proverbs, you'll find the little expression, the direct address, my son, 15 times in 7 chapters. You think he's trying to get his son's attention? My son, my son, my son, listen to me. What's he say? Hear the instruction of thy father, forsake not the law of thy mother, for they shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head, chains about thy neck. The next chapter, chapter 2, verse number 1, we read, my son, if thou wilt receive my words, hide my commandments with thee. Proverbs 3, verse 1, Solomon again says to his sons, my son, next slide, please. There we are. My son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. Chapter 4, verse number 1. This chapter also begins with a declaration about listening to the instruction of a father and attending to no understanding, for I give you good doctrine, forsake not ye not my law. And then Proverbs chapter 7, verse number 1, just happens to be where we finish. We could have used any of these expressions, but he says in Proverbs 7, verses 1 through 3, "My son, keep my words, lay up my commandments with thee, keep my commandments and live, and my law as the apple of thine eye. Bind them upon thy fingers, write them upon the tablet of thine heart." What's Solomon hoping? Don't forget what I say. Get what I've taught you. That's what happened with me and my dad. I sat under my dad, my father, David taught me, and I'm trying to teach you. Don't forget what I've told you. He wants his words to weigh heavily on his sons. And I'm not talking about simply when you live under his roof, though if you're under the roof of your dad right now, you ought to give great attention to his words. Whatever he says is the law for you, because it's the law of that house, and that's how you honor your father. What he says goes, and you should get in step with that. But even as you graduate, move on, when you go from being a minor to an adult, whenever that happens, 18 or 36, whatever it is for you, when you move on to adulthood, you still ought to be listening to your father's words. You know, I think about this in my life now. I'm a grown man. I have my own family. I make most of my own decisions. But honestly, I still get on the phone and I talk to my dad. Now, you know, I don't always go with what my dad says now. And it's okay, because I'm old enough to, you know, make my own decisions. But it's still an honor to him, isn't it? When you call him on the phone and said, "Hey, Dad, what would you do? What do you think about this? I'm thinking about this. What do you think?" That's a singular honor to a dad. It's a way you can leave a lasting legacy of honor still, if your dad is listening, to get his input. Now, if your dad's not here, I bet you can still hear your dad say certain things, certain lines, you know. I remember my dad, "Do as I say, not as I do." Now, I don't agree with the thinking behind that, but I know what he was after, right? He doesn't always get it right. "Just do what I say, because he wants me to turn out right." So there are those ringing thoughts, those ringing words in your ears. As long as they don't contradict the Bible, let them guide you. Respect your dad, honor your dad by following through with the words that he's tried to put into your heart. Follow his wisdom, hold on to his words, follow the counsel that he gave. He doesn't possess all wisdom, but dads do possess a great deal of wisdom that we should query for ourselves, get a hold of. Mark Twain, interesting comment he made. Here's a quote coming up by Mark Twain. "When I was 14 years old, my father was so ignorant, I hated to have the old man around. But when I was 21 years old, I was astonished to see how much my father had learned in only 7 years." Dads are wise. They're wiser than we think they are. We ought to borrow as much brains as we can from our dads. Even if we don't always do exactly what they say, it is an honor to ask and get the input of our father. Since it's right to honor your father, that's what the commandment of the scripture is. Commandment number 5 in the Bible, Exodus 20, verse 12, "Honor thy father and the mother." So this is what the Lord wants us to do. Another way we can honor our dad, not just to remember, not to forget his words, but number 2, don't repeat his mistakes. Number 2, don't repeat his mistakes. As I've read through the book of Proverbs, I've made it part of my life. Since the time I was about 16, 17 years old, somebody put it in my ear at some point. You know, a great way to grow up is to read a proverb a day. You know, like, what's that expression? An apple a day keeps the... There we go. Apple a day keeps the doctor away. It wasn't coming to me. Thanks for your help. I appreciate it. Next week we'll have you preach. All right. So I'm being reminded as a young man, read a proverb a day, keep the devil away, and gain wisdom. So I've done that now for almost 30 years, not quite. So I am very familiar with the book of Proverbs because I'm reading it all the time. And you know what? When I read through the book of Proverbs, almost in every chapter, Solomon is warning his sons, don't go down that road. You know, those people, stay away from them. That woman over there, watch out. Hey, you know, that's going to be a problem. So what are the common mistakes that Solomon was running into in the book of Proverbs that he wanted his sons to avoid? Some of them had tripped up Solomon himself, so he could write with some authority, "Don't do this. Listen, learn from me. Don't repeat the same mistakes. That isn't honoring to me. Don't go down the same road." So a teacher was passing back papers. A picture's coming up. A teacher was passing back papers, and while she was handing them out to the class, she got to one mischievous boy toward the back of the classroom, and she says, "I do not understand how one person can make all these mistakes on a single homework assignment." And the kid kind of gulped, and he thought for a moment, and he said, "Well, it wasn't just me, teacher. My dad helped." Ouch. So dads make mistakes, don't they? We all make mistakes. And I think it's an honor to a dad when we kind of learn from him not to go down the same road. And Solomon certainly wanted to miss most of the he wanted his sons to miss most of his common mistakes. What are these? If you're in Proverbs, you're going to need to be there if you're not already. Go to chapter number 6. I'm in Proverbs, and it's the 6th chapter. And most of these, I picked Proverbs 6 because he mentions most of the mistakes in this chapter. He doesn't in all of them, but we'll start there. Let's start with chapter 6 and verse number 1. "My son, if thou be surety for thy friend, if thou stricken thy hand with a stranger, thou snared with the words of thy mouth, thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. Do this now, my son, deliver thyself. When thou art come into thy hand of thy friend, go humble thyself and make sure thy friend. Give not sleep to thine eyes, nor slumber to thine eyelids. Deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter, and as a bird from the hand of the fowler." One of the common mistakes people make, young people make, are mistakes about wealth. One of the mistakes they make here that he's talking about in this first 5 verses is being surety or being a guarantee for someone else's debts. Don't ever set yourself up where you're co-signing so that you have to be party to someone else's debt. So if they don't pay, you have to johnny up and pay their debts in their place. He says to his sons, don't you get in that. Don't even give sleep to your eyelids. Go get out of that relationship as quickly as possible. That's a bad financial decision. You want to avoid that mistake. Another mistake that's made, especially with young men, is verse number 6. "Go to the amp, thou slugger. Consider her ways, be wise. Which having no guide, overseer, ruler, provides meat in the summer, gathers food in the harvest." Then look at verse 9. "How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep?" Yet a little slumber, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. What's he talking about there? What problem about wealth is there? What's that? Laziness. Sloth. Sluggards. Not being a sluggard about work. This is a problem in America today. Got a bunch of young men won't work. As long as daddy is paying the bills, you know, I can play my video games till I'm 36. All right, this is a problem. So he's saying to his, I don't want my sons coming out like this. And so he's warning his sons about this common mistake, mistakes concerning wealth. Of course, there are other mistakes regarding wealth as well, but here are some of the ones that he was most concerned about with his son. But it wasn't the only mistakes that he was concerned about. Let's read on in verse number 12. Here's another mistake that he wanted his sons to avoid. Verse number 12, Proverbs 6, a naughty person. "A wicked man walketh with a froward mouth. He winketh with his eyes. He speaks with his feet. He teacheth with his fingers. Frowardness is in his heart. He deviseth mischief continually, soweth discord. Therefore shall his calamity come suddenly. Suddenly shall he be broken without remedy." Another mistake, common mistake with young people, is mistakes regarding the company they keep. Mistakes with worthless fellows. Hanging out with the wrong kind of people. Here they're identified as being froward and wicked. Speaking with their fingers. Pointing this way and that to upset, undo, and take the wealth of other people. So Solomon warns his sons, stay away from these kind of fellows. Boy, we all know the power of peer pressure, not just with teenagers, but with young adults and even older people, to go with the flow, to do what everyone else is doing. And so Solomon warns his sons regarding worthless fellows. Look at verse 18, similar thought. "An heart that deviseth wicked imaginations, feet that be swift and run into mischief." Stay away from worthless kind of fellows. Why would you repeat a mistake? Just because your dad did it, don't mean you need to do it. Pardon the English, all right? Don't mean you need to do it. Don't repeat the mistakes with wealth. Don't repeat mistakes with hanging out with the wrong kind of people. Oh, then there's another one here in Proverbs 6. How about mistakes with women? Solomon knew a little bit about this. This problem has derailed more people, more young men than just about any other. In fact, Solomon himself was a pretty bad example of this. How many wives did he have? 700. How many concubines did he have? 300. That's 1,000. I do not know, and I did some Google research this week to find if anybody else in history had as many paramours as Solomon. I couldn't find anybody. This guy takes the cake. And so he tells his sons, look at this, chapter 6, verse 24. To keep thee from the evil woman, from the flattery of the tongue of a strange woman. Verse 25, lust not after her beauty in thine heart, neither let her take thee with her eyelids. For by means of a whorish woman, a man is brought to a piece of bread. I tell my boys all the time, you know that heel, that part of the loaf? You know that nobody wants to eat. It just gets kind of kicked around and nobody wants to throw it away even. It just sits in the bag and just runs around from one end to the other. That, you want to be a heel? You want to be a piece of bread? Then hang out with that kind of person. That's what it's going to bring you to. A whorish woman will bring a man to a heel, a piece of bread. Nobody wants to eat. And the adulteress will hunt for the precious life. So what's he saying, son? Don't make this mistake! Don't make the same mistake I did! I got 1,000 women to keep track of. It's way too many. I'm in trouble here. Don't do this! You know, too often, you know what happens? Dad makes a mistake, and it's visited upon the sons of the third and fourth generation, Exodus says. You know why that is? Because sons and daughters think, well, if Dad did it, guess I can. Might as well. I mean, he can't say anything about it. I mean, he has no credibility or integrity to tell me no. He did it. Most dads would say, man, I blew it. The last thing in the world I want is that to happen to my kids. Don't repeat my mistakes. Don't go there. What's he say in verse number, chapter, the very next chapter, chapter 7, verse, what is it, 25? Yeah, let not thine heart decline to her ways, talking about the strange or whorish woman. Go not astray into her paths, for she hath cast down, I like this verse, she hath cast down how many wounded? Many. Look at the next phrase again. Many strong men have been slain by her. The emphasis of that verse is on quantity or numbers. Many wounded, many strong men. You know how we would say this in contemporary English? Don't be a statistic. That's how we would say it. There are a bunch of people out here that it's happened to them, and your dad is saying, don't be a statistic. Don't let it happen to you. Don't repeat my mistakes. Don't go down the same path. I want something better for my son. And I can honor my dad if I don't repeat his mistakes. Mistakes with wealth, mistakes with worthless fellows, mistakes with women. Oh, but I'm not done with my W's yet. Let's keep going. Chapter 23. Here's another thing that trips up young men. Mistakes with wine. Chapter 20, verse 1 says, wine is a mocker, strong drink is raging, and whoever is intoxicated thereby. Oh, that's not the King James word. What's the word? Deceived thereby. Is not wise. In the last 40 years, there's been a full pendulum swing in Christian circles regarding the use of alcohol. Now many Christians defend it vigorously. However, it used to be one of the most distinctive differences between the Christian culture and the worldly culture. Christians could have a good time without the artificial buzz of alcohol. Solomon knew a little bit about alcohol. He says in Ecclesiastes he gave that track of pleasure a try, and he found it void as well. So he warned his sons to stay away in one of the clearest passages on what our attitude ought to be toward drink in all the Bible is Proverbs 23. Who's he writing to? My son, he said it 15 times in the first 7 chapters. My son, I don't want you to go this route. Look with me. What's he say about it? We don't have time to delve into it. It's not the point of the message. The point is, don't do the same thing I did. Don't repeat my mistakes. Look at verse number 19. Proverbs 23, verse 19 says, hear thou, my son, and be wise, and guide thine heart in the way. Did you notice? He's using that title again, that direct address. Hear now, my son, listen to me. Be not among winebibbers, among riotous eaters of flesh. He's talking about party animals, people that don't just have a little bit of wine. They're really going after it because they want the buzz. Now look down with me. What's the next verse? 29. Verse 29, he goes on to say, and the whole passage is beneficial, but for sake of time, who hath woe? Who hath sorrow? Who hath contentions? Who hath babbling? Who hath wounds without cause? Who hath redness of eyes? They that tarry long at the wine, they that go to seek mixed wine, look not thou upon the wine when it is red, when it giveth its color in the cup, when it moveth itself aright. At the last it biteth like a serpent and stingeth like an adder. Question. Your son or daughter's playing, if you don't have kids, just imagine. Your son or daughter's playing in the backyard, and one of them screams, "Hey, Mom! Snake in the backyard!" And you're like, "Okay, Johnny, just play out there, but keep a safe distance. You don't want to get too close. Because if you get too close to the snake, it might hurt. But if you stay away, that's all right. You can keep playing." Please. The answer is obvious. None of you would leave your kid in the backyard playing with a snake. Not even in the close proximity. You'd be like, going out, grabbing Johnny, hauling him in over your shoulder, and you'd be dialing 911 at the same time. "Fire company, get here and take this rattler out of my yard." That's what you'd be doing. And the word adder here, you look it up on your own. I'm not making this up. Adder is a word for viper or poisonous snake. All right? So what is Solomon saying? Listen, a guy who had everything at his disposal. He had wealth. He had women. He had wine. He had it all. And he's saying, "Son, don't do that. Do not look on the wine when it's red. At the last, it's going to get you like a serpent. It's going to sting you like a viper. What are you thinking?" And now we got Christians today thinking, "Well, you know what? Just a little, you know, just one little glass of wine with my friends. You know, just a beer every now and again. I mean, it's the manly thing to do. After all, it's Father's Day and I should have a cold beer." And we got Christians arguing this way. And Solomon is saying to his sons, "Don't repeat my mistakes. Stay away." All right, you're still not getting it. So I'll tell you another story. I'm making some people uncomfortable in here. That's okay. That's my job. Some of you really think you can keep the snake under control and just pour out enough that he's not going to get you. So I was on a youth activity with my youth group way back, you know, when I was a kid, which was back to the time of the Mayflower sale. And back then, when I was on this youth activity, we went to a state park and we were having a cookout. And so somebody was manning the fire and getting it going. You know how cookouts are. You know, it always takes longer for the fire to get going than it should. And then after the fire gets going, you still have to cook the meat. And that's another 30 minutes. And, you know, and so we're just kind of killing time. And so some of the teenagers kind of wandered a little bit away from the picnic shelter. And we're kind of in the edge of the woods and some tall grass. And suddenly we see a snake. It was a black snake. It may have been a black racer. I'm not sure. But it was black. And all the girls are squealing, you know, and they're all running back to the picnic shelter. And the boys, they're kind of curious. And we're kind of stalking it and following it. And one of the sponsors kind of got on to what was going on. Now, this is not a poisonous snake. You need to know this, all right? This is, if you're not from back east, there's no poison in the snake, all right? And we know that, all right? Because we're trained in that area, what's poisonous, what's not. All right? So there's this black snake. It's sitting in the grass along the edge of the road. And a sponsor comes over and discovers what we're doing. So he gets this great idea. He's going to catch the snake and teach us about snakes, right? He's going to really show the teen boys how this works, right? This is a true story, by the way. So he kind of gets up behind the snake. A bunch of the teen boys who were kind of ahead of the snake looking at it, he's coming up behind with a goal of kind of getting behind its neck and grabbing the snake and picking it up. Well, just when he lunged for the snake to get it behind its head, it kind of jumped ahead, and he ended up grabbing it right in the middle. Now, you guys know where the story is going, don't you? He grabbed that thing, and within a split second, I couldn't even see it. I never saw it happen. That snake had doubled around and bit him right here on the finger. And all I saw was the blood gushing out. And it was a lot of blood. Now, it wasn't poisonous. It wasn't lethal. He was okay. But it did teach me a lesson. Right? You don't handle snakes. You don't pick them up. You let them do their thing, and you go somewhere else and do your thing, and everyone lives happily ever after. Amen. So Solomon is saying to his sons, at the last, alcohol will sting you like a serpent and bite you like an adder. And for crying out loud, we have Christians defending it that it's okay. What are we thinking? Well, you know, I've been drinking for years and it hasn't bothered me at all. You have sons in your home. You have family members around you. You have nieces and nephews who watch you at family gatherings, what you do, and you're a Christian. And if we just go by statistics, there are 330 million people in the United States today. Look it up on Google, okay? It's the truth. 330 million people, all right? Do you know how many alcoholics there are in America? More than 33 million alcoholics. Now, just by that statistic, that's a tenth of the population. The very basic thing I can give you is 1 in 10 people that start on alcohol will end up an alcoholic. That's what the math says. It's actually higher than that if supposedly people don't drink until they get to 21, which we know that isn't true. But if that's true, we took out the kids, the statistic is much higher. It would be more like 200 million to 33 million alcoholics. So now we're looking about about 15% of the people who try alcohol are going to end up alcoholics. So it never hurt you, did it? Well, what about the other people in your family? Have you ever been in a hospital where you saw someone dying in their mid-30s from cirrhosis of a liver? I've been there, prayed at their bedside because they wrecked their bodies by alcohol. One of the 33 million Americans. Friends, there really is a problem if you see what Solomon is saying, defending your alcohol use. If you hate me and never come back to church here, you know, I'm not in it for the glory. If I were, I'd preach somewhere else, all right? I'm in here to tell you the truth. Solomon is saying it's like an adder. You don't play with rattlesnakes. You don't pick snakes up. Because at some point, they're going to come back and they're going to get you. Maybe it didn't today, and maybe it won't tomorrow, but it will come back to haunt you. All of you have been at funerals. All of you have been at funerals where young people, under the influence of alcohol, went somewhere and put their tree around a telephone pole. Have you been at those? Yeah, those are real glamorous funerals to be at. Some of you have family members, girls, under the influence of alcohol, giving their purity away and ended up pregnant or worse because of alcohol, and you still defend it as a Christian. What are we thinking? It is biting our young people, and we as adults are defending it. Okay, you may not like me. That's okay. That's not my job. My job is to tell you the truth. Solomon said, it is a serpent and it'll come back to bite you like a viper. I don't play with rattlesnakes. Take your pick. All right, that was a real pick-me-up. No virtue in snake handling. So just because your dad did it and got away with it doesn't mean you should. One of the surest signs of maturity and growth is that you can learn from someone else's mistakes. I don't have to get bit by a rattler to know they're bad. Avoiding the mistakes of my father is one of the ways I can honor him. I love my dad. Love him dearly. I've talked to him this week. Texted him back and forth. Try to talk to him. I'll try to talk to him later today. But there are some things in his life that I wouldn't want to do. And it is, I don't talk about them, but I don't have to repeat them. I don't have to go down the same road. Since it is right to honor your father, make it your goal to honor him by not repeating his mistakes. Okay, how do I honor my dad? I want to make a lifetime of it. Whether he's living or dead, I can honor my dad if I'll remember his words. Number two, if I'll not repeat his mistakes. Number three, and I'm through, that I don't bring him grief. Don't bring him grief. Solomon mentions this several times in the book of Proverbs. Proverbs 17:21. He that begetteth a fool doeth it to his sorrow, and the father of fool hath no joy. A foolish son is a, what's the word? A grief to his father, and bitterness to him that bare him. Next verse. Proverbs 28:7. Whoso keepeth the law is a wise son, but he that is a companion of riotous men shameth his father. The last thing I want to do is have my dad put a towel over his head and groan and go, oh, that Mike, oh, what a grief. What a sad story his whole life. What a mess. I didn't raise him that way. Why did he turn out that way? I don't want to do that to my dad. And I honor my father when I live with integrity and righteousness my whole life, so there's nothing that ever, oh, dear, I can't believe he did that. I don't want to bring my dad grief. And I honor him when I labor to do things God's way so I don't bring grief on my home. I really want to bring joy to my parents. It was a joyful day when they brought me home from the hospital. It was a joyful day when they saw me graduate kindergarten and graduate high school and graduate college. I want to bring them joy. In fact, Solomon said that. Proverbs 23, the chapter about wine, he says, the father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice, and he that begetteth a wise child shall have joy of him. It's right to live in such a way that you make your father proud. There's no honor in shaming or humiliating your dad or embarrassing him. How do you embarrass or shame your father? Here's some thoughts. You shame him when you complain about your upbringing. You didn't have enough of this. He never was at that. He didn't care to. Well, that all might be true, but I don't need to run it around. I don't need to argue about it. I don't need to bring it back up. One little tyke, apparent misunderstanding of what the word broken home was, brought a rebuke from his dad. There was a crack in the foundation of his basement, so he went around telling people he was from a broken home. His dad said that needed to stop. Watch what you say about your dad and the home and your upbringing. You shame him by not being faithful to your wife or kids. You shame him when you do not stay out of trouble. You shame him when you neglect God for earthly pursuits. Therefore, make it your goal in life to bring joy and delight to the person responsible for bringing you into the world. Well, you know, if you knew my dad, you wouldn't be saying these things, because my dad was a loser. He was a scoundrel. I did some Google searches. You can even get cards that say, my dad was a loser. Like, really? Someone would send that to... Really? I agree. I don't know your dad. But in the command, honor your father and mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Exodus 20, verse 12. No qualifiers in there. No qualifiers about if you got a good dad or bad dad or no. And you can't fix hatred or misconduct of the past by adding more misconduct and hatred in the present. Leave it alone. Take some steps this year to honor your dad. Just see how God might use that to mend fences. Story that's always gripped me. It's about a missionary. His name is John Patton. He was a missionary to the New Hebrides Islands. They're in the South Pacific, getting on toward Australia, but not quite there. Today, on a map, they're known as Vanuatu. He was a pioneering missionary to cannibals and headhunters. He was warned not to go because his church and his family thought for sure he's going to be eaten by the cannibals. He went in faith. As he was leaving home to go off to college to train for the next step of his life, he had to walk 40 miles to the school where he was going to be. I guess this was, I don't know the story whether rapid transit wasn't available or just what, but he was walking 40 miles to go to college. For the first six, he and his dad walked step and step. And then it was time for parting of the ways. So Dad started back and John kept walking. And after a short distance, John saw a little rise and John climbed the hill and he looked back to his dad. Just at the same time, his dad had climbed a dike not far from where he was. And so they're both looking each other from a perch. His dad had told him on the trip, "God bless you, my son. Your father's God prosper you and keep you from all evil." And John, as he looked back at the distance between he and his dad as they had parted ways, said, "I watched through blinding tears till his form faded from my gaze, and then hastening on my way, vowed deeply and oft, by the help of God, to live and act so as never to grieve or dishonor such a father and mother as he had given me." He got it. What did he get? His whole life would be an honor if he lived the right way. This is what Solomon wanted for his boys. This is what I'm encouraging you to do for your dad today. Honor him not just this day, but the rest of the days, the way you live. Since honoring your father is what God wants you to do, then make it a priority to reflect favorably on your father all the days of your life. Last slide. Your dad may not be a superhero, but I think your responsibility as a child of God is to make him feel like that as you seek to honor him for the role he's played in your life. May God help us. Shall we pray?